As for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We have a new American dream. Not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. And as usual, I'm going to open things up with a song. So here's something I thought might be appropriate to the way the world's working today. On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with the gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness. The boredom overtook us, and he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces, knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. If you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle. He drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. The night got deathly quiet and his face lost all expression. Said, "If you're going to play the game, boy, you've got to learn to play it right. You've got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away and knowing what to keep. Because every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser. The best you can hope for is to die in your sleep. And when he'd finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out his cigarette and faded off to sleep. And somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace I could keep. You've got to know when to fold 'em, know when to hold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You've got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. I figure our whole life is a gamble lately, so what the heck? That seemed like an appropriate song. Thank you, Mr. Kenny Rogers. All right. I have something a little different for you tonight. I'm going to play something from a poet named Chris Smith. And here we go with that.
Yo, what's good, y'all? Virtual world, virtual viewers out there. I'm Chris Smith. I'm coming at y'all from Houston, Texas. Yes, I'm a hip-hop artist slash spoken word poet slash songwriter. And, you know, I wanted to give a big shout to Chuck Gregory for, allowing me to be on his radio show. So, yeah, so I figured I'd send in a pre-recording. Yeah, so, but big up to Chuck G, holding down Florida. But, yeah, like I said, I met Chuck, on a virtual open mic, on virtual open mic Mondays, courtesy of Michelle's Dome. And yeah, like I said, I do like many events here in Houston. Like I do like, I do like a monthly showcase here in Houston. And I do virtual events as well. And with that, and speaking of poetry, like I'm gonna just break off a little something. So this piece is entitled At One With Poetry. It goes like this. She ain't gotta show off her passion with sleek or long hair. I can see it through her deli with a sacred strong flare, like a gleaming mermaid that's swimming through the pond spare. Worldwide, her pearls thrive to show our love and bond is shared. She'd have to send me through the hassle of the voicemail just to connect with the passion, never let the voice fail. How I sprint to those mobile vibes, curate a moist spell through fire and desire, be it one to make the choice well. She be on avenues of love versus savage news amongst the damn scene. Yes, indeed, making massive moves. She had me in her scopes that will amaze me with her rapture path and had me going 8 miles, not shitty with her aftermath. No need to direct her or no need to look her in the eyes. Heat the effects up before her, needs to book her on the rise. She be the poetry that I discuss while making plans with wine and have her lasting longer than the Popeye's chicken sandwich line. There you go, y'all. That was real short, sweet. That was entitled At One With Poetry. Once again, big up to Chuck, allow me to be on this radio show and keeping it, active like every Thursday. And also, if most of y'all out there are on Instagram, y'all can follow me on Instagram at KRISSMITH1983. That's Chris Smith, all lowercase, no space, 1983. Get it to boy. Peace, y'all. Hope y'all enjoyed it.
All right. And now I'm pleased to introduce our regular guest in this second week of each month, Sheena Powell Zuri. And I added her up to the show already. So welcome to the show, Sheena.
Greetings, Chuck, and thank you for welcoming me back to the New American Dream on Revolution Radio. It's so good to be here. Chris Smith, wow, all the way from Houston, Texas. Such a welcome energy in this mad, mad world. Thank you for sharing that. Short and sweet indeed. Love his expression. Looking forward to hearing more from him. And what a cool song you sang. You always choose a good one.
Well, thank you.
Yes, life is indeed a gamble. As a kid, I was lost in the story told by Kenny Rogers. The way he told it, the music, it was so mesmerizing. I felt like I was a part of that story. I was witnessing it. That's the way to tell a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't it make you think? I tell you, it has a whole new meaning to me now as an adult compared to when I was a kid. So
yeah,
when you hear these songs or listen to these poems, I'm sure if we go revisit Christmas poem, it'll have a different meaning to us next week or in a couple of years.
Right. Yeah.
It all has a different meaning to us depending on our filter and our life experience. That is the beauty of art.
Absolutely.
So Chuck, you, whether it's you or me, Chris or others, we express so differently in a different way, but we have something similar to say, and it's part of the human experience and interpreting this crazy ride we call life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to be here. We are indeed living through disaster upon disaster, sharing in this human experience. And it's great to have this forum to express and present unique viewpoints to the listeners of your show, where we are all encouraged to think beyond the ho-hum norm.
Mm-hmm.
Tropical Storm Elsa, yes. Tropical Storm Elsa, and sometimes Hurricane Elsa, has put us all on high alert in the Caribbean, the Florida, up the Eastern Seaboard. Nothing like a natural disaster to bring into focus what is important, our safety and the safety of our loved ones. This tenet, unfortunately, was the one luxury not afforded by those who perished recently in the tragic building collapse in Surfside, and my heart is heavy for those lost and those left behind. The residents there, I know a lot of people that live in that area, so it was very frightening to learn of this, and it's not something that you would expect to hear in a developed nation.
Right.
The residents, right. The residents there were mostly affluent, but at the end of the day, what was truly important, just like in the face of a hurricane, it was personal safety and the safety of loved ones that was of paramount importance. It doesn't matter who you are, or where you live, or what you have, the loss that you feel is the same. And we are all learning that we're one people, you know, we're one global society. In the past 18 months, as a society, we've lived together through the coronavirus pandemic, and many sadly did not live through this menace that was common to us all. Just like a storm that ravages all shores on all continents, all people are affected regardless of language or skin color or religion or social status. In the face of one disaster after the next, we all feel it differently, yet something has happened that is in common. Something's happening here, what isn't exactly clear, as the famous sage Stephen Stills once said.
Yeah.
but truly, Chuck, what that means is that there is a shift in the world right now. We feel it. I am questioning, where are we now? Where have we been and where are we going? By the way, I would challenge Joyce Carol Oates to an evolving interpretation of her famous short story, Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been?
Mm.
that's as an aside, another show. But before delving deeper into this topic, I'd like to read a poem by Sherwood Ross that I find relevant. It's called The Painting of the Lady in Red and the Sailor. So, if I may.
Please do.
This is, thank you. This is the painting of the Lady in Red and the Sailor by Sherwood Ross. In the painting of the Lady in Red and the Sailor, the couple are seated at an outdoor cafe. The woman is much older, practiced, and knows what to say. Much of her ability to please is knowing how to put young sailors at their ease in the room she rents in the cheap hotel with her doll collection and a medicinal smell. A waiter in a white jacket with a black bow tie pours the lady a glass of Sauterne, white and dry, from a twisted hand that seems oddly bent, but does not tarnish its essential charm or mar the ivory color of the lady's arm. For years, this engrossing 3x4 foot canvas hung on the office wall of my accountant, and I never failed to admire it when I visited. "You like it so much," he said to me one day at the end of our business session. "Take it off my hands. I'm tired of looking at it," which is how the gift of a lifetime fell into my possession.
Mm.
In the years since then, the painting has hung over my writing desk and reminds me of a lady in red that I once met in my youth on a weekend pass visiting a naval base in France. Recently, I discovered I could enter and leave the world of the painting as I pleased, that I could sit with the couple and talk to them at the table where they take their ease. And whenever I passed through the painting's door, I heard old love songs on an accordion remembered from long years before, played by a gypsy dancing on the sawdust floor, beckoning me to step into his waterfront cafe with the young sailors on leave in Marseille, so that I, now dressed in my civilian clothes, can dance with the lady close and slow to Edith Piaf's La Vie en Rose. And I am become 22 again and taste the tobacco on the lady's lips and see the harbor from her room spread out below, aglow with the lights of its 100 ships, glimmering like stars upon a watery sky, leaking through the evening's gloom, seen opaquely through a window smirched with grime, alongside the flickering red neon hotel sign. As I press against the lady's pillowy softness, and my life takes on a new, fresh start. For its several flaws, no painting by Picasso ever spoke more directly to my heart. And that was the painting of the Lady in Red and the Sailor by Sherwood Ross.
Yes, Sherwood certainly did have a way with words. Wow, that's what a wonderful poem.
He did. And life taking a new, fresh start, just
yes.
Like Kenny Rogers' songs and just what... just like the poem that you shared by Chris, it just has such a new meaning revisiting this poem. And this particular poem is so ethereal and imaginative. It was written after looking at an actual painting. To dive into that painted work of art and experience something never thought of before, to be lost in a special world, it just shows you the power of the human imagination. And for many reasons, some heavy and some light, we global citizens are in the process of rebuilding. Now is time that coming off of a noxious global pandemic, a nationwide fight for racial justice, addressing local tragedy, is a time to think differently. We can do something different. We can move ahead in a new imaginative way. Why not look back to where we were, realize our mistakes and learn from them for the better? Just like we revisit a song and revisit a painting, You have a different perspective and you can glean something different from that. So imagine what we can come up to make our lives better, our world better. I talk a lot about communication, about being human, about expressing through art. On a micro level, businesses are developing and rolling out return to work strategies. You know, this is a very simple thing, but we can roll out new strategies for ourselves as people and how to be better global citizens, how we can share this human experience and give to our fellow person in new imaginative ways and just make things better, realize this shift and make things better. Realize that in the face of a pandemic, when kids, for example, are told to go home and just learn from home, that there are some kids that cannot do that because they don't have internet access or they do not have the technology or the infrastructure to be able to do that. And that some parents are not a part of a middle class or upper middle class socioeconomic group that can afford such a thing. In my community, they're working on providing broadband that's available to everyone, you know, something new and something fresh so that we can remove the separateness from the person that lives next door.
Or at least remove one separateness, because there are so many, it's just a small step. But it is an important one, that just having that internet access is an amazing connection that you're providing. Of course, yeah. I mean, you can argue that being so connected electronically, you end up losing your connection to the people around you, the physical connection, and I know that does happen sometimes.
It does, and on a deeper level, and it's something that I never considered, but I was enlightened to the fact that there is not the capability for some people to participate in that technology and to participate in society in that way. And that to me, that hit me very deeply, that word participate. It's, you can't even participate because you don't have access to this thing. So this is one of the things that we can imagine in a world that is so technologically advanced that we can ensure that everybody can advance and express in the same way in the same society. So we revisit the painting, we hear the song differently, you know, we feel poetry differently every time we come back to it. So we need to take that same approach to how we look at the issues in our world, issues and how we're dealing with racial injustice and infrastructure and how we educate our children and how we respond to storms and pandemics, you know. It's a real thing. And art helps us to participate in that very real thing out in the world.
Absolutely so. Well, we have about 3 minutes left, Sheena. Is there anything you would like to share with the audience about things that you're going to be doing, things that they could look at online, whatever, you know, just go for it.
Yes, I am still a part of the the Miami Poets Soiree with Terry Starr. And I am interacting with her in a remote capacity. And as many people are still operating in a remote environment. And I've also joined a new group of poets in North Carolina, where I am residing now, called Nexus Poets. So I am involved in that new group. I have some new poetry in the works and finishing up my collection called Polyhymnia. So the next time that I visit you, I would like to share some of my new poetry coming out of that collection.
That sounds great.
I've been encouraged to revisit that and finish those works. So some of us have some time that we can spend now on these projects. So I'm happy to be able to have the time to spend. So Nexus Poets, Miami Poets Soiree in Miami. So it's really great to be a part of this community, this human community and poetic community. And lastly, I'm working on putting together a Sherwood Ross Poetry Award with the Florida State Poets Association. So I'm working with the Sherwood Ross's family, and it's going to be a great category for young poets, or all poets, to compete in.
Very good.
And that's where I've been.
All right. Well, I guess if you're in North Carolina now, I guess I won't be seeing you in person anytime soon.
No, but I still travel to Miami quite frequently, so we'll have to connect in person then.
We should do that. Yeah.
You come up here, Chuck, anytime for a retreat. You're always welcome.
All right, that sounds great. I may take you up on it.
Please do.
Thank you so much, Sheena, and I really appreciate having you on this second Thursday each month. And talk to you next time.
Thank you for having me, Chuck. Thank you for everyone for listening.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the new American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, it is a listener-supported network, so make sure you show them some support. Head on over to freedomslips.com. Look for how you can subscribe on Patreon, make a donation one way or another, buy some cool stuff. There are lots of options. So just do it. It's the right thing to do. Yeah. All right. I'm going to pull in Philip Ferrugio now. Philip joins us in the second segment every week. And we call this segment, It's the Empire Stupid. All right. There he is, Mr. Philip Ferrugio from Port Orange, Florida. Take it away.
I hope I don't hear the echo.
Yeah,
I do hear the echo. Okay. Is that okay, Chuck, that I hear the echo?
Well, it's what it is. It is what it is. Go for it.
Okay, go for it. Hijacking my flight. You know, being that this was July 4th, I wrote a piece, Hijacking My Flag. Well, as a baby boomer who has seen lots of instances of the empire using my flag as their private property, this newest one takes the cake. I mean, my generation went through the whole America, love it or leave it rhetoric during the Vietnam debacle. Many of us, either old or new to activism, just tossed that aside as baloney. Yet a majority of my friends and neighbors unfortunately bought into the hype and spin that the flag and our national anthem were to be sacrosanct, beyond reproach. Many anti-war demonstrations actually had our flag burned, which to this writer was not a good tactic of protest. The more powerful and thought-provoking protest was to turn the flag upside down to reveal the upside-down manner of this empire. As with Alice in Wonderland, the opposite was usually correct in most instances. How it sickened me and many others when we turned on the boob tube to watch Bob Hope entertaining our soldiers in the Nam, as if this was World War II all over again. In Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now, 1979, he has one scene reminiscent of those Bob Hope visiting the troops with a lot of tits and ass, which revealed the perverted sense of what phony wars do to the soldiers. The helicopter dropped off two beautiful starlets dressed like Vegas, hookers, onto a stage deep within the macabre recesses of an off-the-radar jungle post. The VC across the river are held at bay by our pounding weaponry so as to allow the show to go on. Finally, the young sex-starved GIs rush the stage to grab some TNA and some pussy as a giant bird in the sky barely is able to whisk the lovelies away. The Cheney Bush gang, we who know better, realize that Cheney was a controller and Junior was the idiot emperor with no clothes. They lied and deceived us into this war on terror, holding our flag hostage. They had the suckers, saps, and lollipops hanging over garage doors in my neighborhood or on their cars and trucks, lots of pickups in bushland, making it the phony symbol of patriotism. How many dead or wounded for life U.S. soldiers and, by a factor of 10 times, Iraqi and Afghan civilians before our foolish neighbors realized the truth? Sadly, most of them never did. Thus, this phony war on terror still goes on and on, always with the new and more dangerous enemies. This empire is so smoothly diabolical. Another July 4th, once again celebrating our, quote, independence from Britain, is really counterfeit on many fronts. Researchers like Dean Henderson, who I happen to have interviewed on our radio show with Chuck, can give interesting and concise accounts of how our nation never was freed from the influence of England and its infamous City of London, the banking bandit center of the world. His book, The Federal Reserve Cartel of 2014, it was written, covers most of this information. The second counterfeit point is that the celebration of not only our flag, but our military as well, in this current climate of empire, is actually unpatriotic. No, to really celebrate our flag and our military is to have this empire pulled back and save our nation from the fiscal and moral bankruptcy that is approaching. To paraphrase the great Malcolm X from one of his fine speeches, many of my good and decent friends and neighbors have been bamboozled, conned, and led astray. A true Independence Day would be a great awakening from the greedy and evil ones who run this empire and the many who serve it. Thank you.
Very powerful, Philip. And well, we know what happened to Malcolm X for standing up that way.
Yep, we know what
same
happened
thing,
to him.
Same thing that happened to Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy,
and the
Paul Wellstone.
And these are hits too. You're right. These are hits.
Exactly.
The hits just keep on coming. You're right, Chuck. And it's very sad that we who care, you know, who we care about our neighbors, our loved ones, our country, have to endure this. You know, Chuck, I can't even, you know, I watch a lot of the news shows on TV, the news talk, because I find them interesting as far as being very, very theatrical. Mm-hmm. But to watch these people, whether it's Fox, well, that's really bad, Fox or CNN or MSNBC, it's this total abandonment of the real issues. I mean, the real, you know, meat and potato issues that are affecting us. And they give you all this other garbage, this he said, she said, and the gossip, Trump and this one and that one and the baboo, baba. And they don't talk about the real problems. I mean, I heard, Chuck, I heard this, I listened to this Democratic congresswoman being interviewed, and she said, I walked through my district, and I'm concerned about what these people really need, what they're really concerned about, and that's medical care. And that's why, you know, we want this CARES Act money to go through. But meanwhile, Chuck, she won't even touch the subject of Medicare for All, you know, national health insurance. She won't even talk about it, like it doesn't even exist. I mean, you know, take a plane and go to England and see what they have there.
Right.
See what the English people have, and ask the English people of the street. Ask an Englishman or an Englishwoman in the street, would you trade what you have for what we have in the United States? And I'll guarantee you the overwhelming majority will say no.
Uh-huh.
You know, for a couple of $100 a year, they get full medical coverage. What?
I know someone who actually, she wanted to have a baby, and they had problems. And she actually went to I think it was Serbia to get an artificial insemination process because it was cheaper. It was like maybe a third or a quarter of the price to fly over there, stay for 6 months, and have all this process done with good medical care, you know, from that country, as opposed to doing it here at home. And that's just ridiculous.
You know, there are travel agencies that book people to take dental trips to mm-hmm. Czechoslovakia, Hungary, of course we know about Mexico, and mm-hmm. and they go down and they go to these places, and they get a pretty fine, you know, dental care, you know, not mm-hmm. Back alley dental care. Chuck, right. It's one third. It's about one third of the cost that it would cost here mm-hmm. to have the work done. I mean, my brother lived on the border. He was in McAllen, Texas. He was a professor at Pan American University for 10 years. And he was right on the border. And somebody turned him on to this, dental clinic right over the border. Mm-hmm. He would drive his car, park by the border. Yeah, there's a place where you can park. They would walk over the border. And I don't know if they had to take a cab or whatever. And the clinic was right there, filled with Americans going there for dental work. And it was, I'll give you an example, a crown, which here in the U.S. is now like $1,100, was like $200, $250. Uh-huh. I mean, the dentist had a wife that worked in the other part of the clinic, which uh-huh. was for the gums. She was a periodontist.
Right.
And you could get the total full mouth periodontal, they call it office surgery. Mm-hmm. Over here, it was, when I had it done in, 17 years ago, it was about $4,000 for the whole mouth.
Uh-huh.
You get the whole mouth done for like about maybe $1,200, $1,300, $1,400.
Ah.
The whole mouth, yeah. Yeah. You know, by a real professional. So, right. You know, yeah. And you're right, Chuck. I mean, it's ridiculous that these politicians, Republican or Democrat, you know, there's a few Democrats who talk about it, but there are very few of them, and they don't really talk too loud because the Biden administration doesn't want to do it. And so here's Biden, you know, and the Democrats wanting to create more money to pay for infrastructure, which is important, and, you know, and the unemployment and all these good things. But they don't want to create money to have a national health care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's happening, let me give you an example. What's happening is in New York, for instance, the unions have the teachers union and a few others have already been compromised. And what they're going to do, and there's other states that are passing laws. They're not giving people a choice. They want to force the people who are retirees, you know, over 65, they want to force them onto a Medicare Advantage plan.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if people are listening to this, if you don't know the difference between a Medicare Advantage plan and the plan that I have, which is Medicare as a primary, it's night and day. Okay. A Medicare Advantage plan. I'll give you an example. I was an idiot and some stupid, well, not stupid, some shrewd insurance broker sent me a postcard when I turned 65, and like an idiot, like a schmuck, I went down to this clown, and he convinced me to get the Medicare Advantage plan. Oh, you don't have to pay anything extra. Well, that's true. With the plan I have now, it's about $170 a month extra for the supplemental. For the plan with the Medicare Advantage on the United, there's no extra charge. And, all right. Now, and you go to certain doctors, you know, you can have a plan where you have a POP, you go to certain doctors who are in the network. Example, my ear, nose, and throat, I think I said this on the show already. My ear, nose, and throat doctor, let's say 3 years ago, wanted to have the procedure to have a deviated septum fixed.
Uh-huh. Right?
And United turned him down twice already. I mean, I don't have... But they turned them down twice. They turned them down twice. That's a Medicare Advantage plan, okay? The insurance companies have all the power. They actually, I mean, I don't know if people know the way it works. Under the Medicare Advantage plan, the insurance companies handle all your medical billing and everything, and the government pays them. So there is no real, when people think they have what's called Medicare, what it really is you're having the insurance companies handle everything. And they, yeah, so it's really sad. I mean, what goes on. So
yeah,
that's what I wanted to share with everybody.
I actually have a Medicare Advantage plan, but okay. I don't go to the doctor very often, so it works for me. Lorraine is... just turning 65 next month, and we've set her up with a plan similar to mine. We're going to see how that works. Previously, she was on a shared cost Medicaid plan, which you don't get any choice on that either. And this is actually a step up for her because there's a lot more possible providers. And... I don't know. Well, we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm just telling you that from my experience, I mean, Medicare Advantage plans is a ploy by the insurance companies to get people under their thumb. And it's better than not having insurance, okay?
Yeah.
And it's better than having some stupid, shitty private insurance.
Uh-huh.
But it's not that good compared to when you have Medicare as your primary. And then have a supplemental that will pick up, you know, everything. I'm just telling you, it's a scheme. It works for some people. It might work for you. But if something happens where you might need a certain surgery, like I needed the deviated septum,
right.
And they wouldn't do it. They just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't allow it, you know. And that happens a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
so anyway,
we'll have to see how that comes out.
Yeah, see how it comes out. But anyway, the important thing is that we both understand, I think, that we're living in a country where the right wing has hijacked our flag. You know?
Yeah.
They've counterfeited, you know, patriotism. I mean, you look at these idiots on the right, you know, and I'm not a Democrat, so I'm just telling you, but I have no use for the right wing is worse. The Republicans are the worst. But they actually go around, they're calling Biden and the Democrats communists.
I know.
Communists. I mean, I crack up.
It couldn't be farther from the truth. Biden is way too leaning toward the right for my taste.
Oh, Biden! Biden is a quintessential servant of the empire, as was Obama.
Yeah.
And as was Clinton. Of course, we know Bush was. We know his father was. They all served the empire. They all waved the flag. They all want to continue having all these wars. They want to continue having the military all over the world. Now they're yelling, the U.S. is leaving Afghanistan. What's going to happen to those poor people? Well, let me tell you something. The U.S. had no business ever going into Afghanistan. Okay?
Exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. And Iraq. Iraq.
Yeah. Then you get the people who argue that, well, yes, you're right. We didn't have any business going in there, but we're there now. Oh, can we leave these people alone? We'd be deserting them. We'd be betraying.
You know, it's like, you know what I tell people? Yeah, you know what I tell people? The sheriff makes a mistake and they go to a house with a family living there that they thought was a dope house, but it was the wrong house, whatever it was. And they go in shooting because they were told that people have guns and it's dangerous. They go in, they destroy the whole house.
Right.
They kill some of the people in the house, you know, some of them. The place is a mess and they want to stay there. they don't want to take any responsibility for what they did, you know?
Yeah.
It's sick. It's sick. I mean, I just can't believe, you know, and I mean, the Democrats, I think it was, who was it? Maybe it was Glenn Ford, the writer for the Black Agenda Report.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know, but maybe it was him or somebody, maybe one of the guys who's on your show. I can't think of his name now, but basically they had this thing where they said, well, the Republicans are the wolves. And the Democrats are the foxes. He said, the wolf, you know he's going to devour you. But the fox, he's very shrewd, you know. He's going to nibble at you, you know.
Yeah.
But that's true. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, you know. And if you put on all these sporting events, oh, my God. I put the hockey game on last night. The beginning of the show at Tampa, they have the honor guard. First, he sings the national anthem, and then they have the honor guard come out with the camouflage. Oh, it's like a big production, and the flag across the whole arena. There's a big flag, and it's like World War II, like we're fighting the Germans, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, where are we fighting the Germans?
We're fighting, well, mostly ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
And it's funny how these Republicans are calling. Oh, now the Republicans are saying Marjorie, she said, oh, the brown shirts are out. The Democratic brown shirts, the Democratic, you know, Nazis are out and they're trying to force people to get vaccinated, you know. That's not what they're knocking on doors. Well, they're going to low income neighborhoods and they're asking people, would you like to be vaccinated? That's all they're doing. They're not going in with the needle in their hands. Like, I'm going to vaccinate you.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, those are the stormtroopers. I mean, these are the terms these morons use.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the stormtroopers was January 6th at the Capitol building. That was the stormtroopers. And a lot of them were wearing neo-Nazi insignias. I mean, it's crazy.
I know.
It's absolutely insane what's going on in this country.
It is.
You know, it's sad. It really. And this guy wants to become president again?
Really?
Yeah. You know something?
And if he doesn't, how about the great, wonderful governor of Florida? Oh my God, Ron DeSantis.
Let me ask you a question. Is anybody checking Ron's dietitian there? I mean, maybe they should tell Ron to stop eating so much. He looks like his face was pumped up with air. He looks like Emeril Lagasse. You ever see Emeril on his commercials? Emeril looks like somebody pumped him up with air. His face, he's all pumped up. These guys are eating too much. Chuck, they're eating. They're eating the wrong stuff. Eat what I eat. I'm skinny.
Well, they're eating Soylent Green. What do you think?
Soylent Green. Okay, trivia question. Name the two famous actors that were in that movie.
Oh, man.
The peanut gallery's yelling out.
Yeah, she said Jane Fonda, but I don't think so.
No, it's Edward G. Robinson and Charlton Heston.
I was going to say Charlton Heston, but
yeah, Charlton Heston. He never met an epic that he didn't want. He didn't like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Moses and whoever else.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was in.
Oh yeah.
Ben-Hur, Ben-Hur was a good movie.
Man, love that chariot scene in Ben-Hur.
that was something else. But the scene in Ben-Hur that I always liked was the Arab guy that had the white horses that owned them, and the way he treated them like his children. That was a beautiful scene. He said, "My lovelies," remember he was kissing them goodnight and everything.
Yeah.
I found that really, oh, man.
Really?
All right, time to go.
All right. Thank you, Philip.
Take care.
All right. You too.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
For years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And our next guest of the evening is Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer is at the Catholic Worker Farm in Chiapas, Mexico. He joins us in this second week each month. I spoke with Richard earlier today, and I'm going to play that talk right now. Here we go.
Hi, Chuck.
Well, hello, Richard. How are you?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Good.
So, does the weather look threatening? Do you want to pre-record, or do you want to be live tonight?
No, the weather is actually... excuse me. We might well be cut off. We're in the middle of a rainstorm here.
Ah. Okay, well, let's see what we can get in.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Okay.
this is about more thoughts on violence. I wonder if the news has gotten worse in the world, or if the advent of the internet has simply made it all more accessible. The recent elections in Mexico of June the 6th are a case in point. In the campaigning from April through the beginning of June, 397 attacks against legislators, some were merely warnings, took place. The bulk of the warnings were against local candidates for mayor or alcalde in five different states of the 32 comprising the country. 36 aspiring candidates were killed. Two candidates were kidnapped and later released. In all, 1,076 aggressions were reported. Veracruz and Guerrero reported the majority of the incidents. 53 cases that were confirmed were perpetrated by organized crime cartels. Many of the political parties quit campaigning, especially in Guerrero. One man elected in Guerrero was killed on the day he was elected. Much of the violence was directed by the cartels, while others were by opposing political parties. President López Obrador was quick to blame the other political parties for publicizing the killings. The reasons are legion, but certainly the largest share in Mexico City and Guerrero revolved around money and influence. In a federal government like Mexico, most funds are assigned out of the federal budget to state budgets. The states then delegate funds for local municipalities to fund police, schools, etc. The cartels are seeking to control the alcaldes for some of that money, but more importantly, if they can control the mayor, they can control the local police. Since 2006, some 65 ecologists have been killed. Those people protecting the forests, wetlands, and national parks are largely indigenous. And most have been trying to protect the forest from cutting, from large corporations, mostly Canadian, who want to open mines, or the other largely Mexican corporations that want to build hotels in the wetlands around Cancun to expand the tourism industry. Journalists are not exempt from the recent violence. The reporters who covered the drug wars are particularly vulnerable. Many of the most notable reporters travel with bodyguards, but the presence of the extra body hasn't stopped the murders of two journalists in northern Mexico, along with their bodyguards. There's also the violence directed at two reporters who exposed a ring of pedophiles with the governor, also implicated, of another state sending his police and transporting one of the women two states away to interrogate her. President López Obrador has lamented the violence, but has preferred to continue his campaign against corruption with mixed results. Four of the last five governors have been indicted or convicted in the state of Tamaulipas in the north of Mexico, which abuts Texas. Two are currently in jail, one is awaiting extradition to the U.S., while the fourth is still covered by what is called fuero. That's F-U-E-R-O. The concept of fuero is a bit difficult to explain. Basically, it means that an elected official cannot be charged with a crime while he or she is in office, unless the governing body, whether state or federal, votes to curtail the fuero. In other words, if the party in power is the same as that of the governor, they will usually not vote to remove the fuero to keep it in place. Two of the recently elected federal delegates have been kicked out of their political parties, and the fuero for each has been curtailed. The political parties are thus abandoning the delegates to the General Assembly. One has been finally charged with rape and rape of a minor, while the second one for laundering money for a cartel. They were both elected in the voting of June the 6th. They were both initially indicted before the election, but elected nonetheless. Here in Chiapas, in the municipality of San Juan Cholula, where tribalism reigns supreme, a friend of over 10 years was wanted, was warned, attacked, and finally left the race for alcalde. He's a school principal with over 5 years of running rural schools throughout his municipality. He has a master's degree in history with a second master's in education. More importantly, he is from the town. He was born, raised, and worked there for all his life. In his case, it's the caciques, the tribal leaders, who warned him that only one of them could become the alcalde.
Mm.
All of this is in Mexico. In the U.S., I only read or watch Mexican news to see the violence surrounding George Floyd for the insurrection in Congress. Much of violence and injustice has been with the world for as long as civilization has existed. Does it seem worse these days?
Mm.
I don't know.
Indeed. I mean, I was thinking that was a rhetorical question, and then I decided maybe you wanted me to answer. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, it seemed a lot worse. But then I remember when I was growing up and when I was in high school in Philadelphia, and really paying attention to the news, that there were a huge number of killings every single day reported in the newspaper. So many that it wasn't, even in the front section, let alone on the front page, there would be a statistic. X number of people died in violence last night. That of course is just a few for a few years ago. I'm 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But,
growing up in Southern California, they used to, the murder rate in Los Angeles was extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of led to the whole militarization of the police.
Yeah.
Which caused even more violence in my world.
Uh-huh.
Detroit used to be the murder capital of the world.
Right.
And I guess one of the problems is that there's so much more news in the way of internet stuff, people filming and so on. But I just wonder sometimes, like here in Mexico, it's just kind of overwhelming, all the violence connected with the election. Fortunately, you don't see much of that in the U.S., but it's pretty common in Latin America, not just here in Mexico, but also in Guatemala and certainly Honduras.
Uh-huh.
Now, Nicaragua is arresting the opposition candidates. And that's pretty troubling. They're arresting them for treason.
Mm.
I don't know what to think of it. Maybe I just better concentrate on raising flowers, fruit, and vegetables.
I know what you mean.
I do think that
what you do there on the farm, what I try to do here on the radio show, and also in the my community and church here, I think these things do make a difference. They don't make a really big difference, but maybe all movements or whatever really do have to develop from from bottom up, as it were.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I hope things make a difference. I just got finished getting rid of the last of the plums on our plum tree trees, and each time I when the plums were ripe and ready on one tree, I'd call a family, and they and the adults and the children would come and shake the tree and climb the tree and collect the fruit. And with seven plum trees, we had seven families that got fruit. And sometimes, somehow that makes me feel better. And so, but anyway, it's a question.
It is.
Yeah.
There is, there's a lot to be said for visible results, like seven families getting fruit. That means a lot to them, and you get to see that something you're part of did have an effect.
That's all for today. In general, I'm just really busy with the garden and cleaning up and trying to make it through the rainstorm. Although the good news is we've got vegetables growing like crazy. I planted five different varieties of tomatoes from heirloom seeds that a friend of mine gave me in the U.S. So now I'm trying to see which of those does the best down here. And they're all flourishing. And we've got squash and onions and all kinds of stuff growing.
Well, that's cool.
And of course, the irony is I probably won't take 5% of it all. I'll just give it all away.
Right. Well, I don't know if that's ironic or very cool. I lean toward it being very cool. So.
Take it easy, Chuck.
Thank you, Richard. Great talking with you.
Talk to you next month.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Sure.
Bye. And continuing with Catholic Workers, here we have Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Workers.
Yeah, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Just stressed out.
Yeah.
It ebbs and flows. I was prepared to talk to you, and then got caught up in some stuff. Often happens, and when you call, it's like, oh my God, oh yeah, and this is a warning. My phone broke. You know, these things do fall apart.
Uh-oh.
So when I went to the store, I couldn't get my Korean lookalike. So they sold me on an Apple. So I have a new phone in a world where, you know, I can barely answer the damn thing right now. I don't know how to delete. I don't know how to move from. I mean, it's the smartphone outsmarting us theme. And I'm angry at it.
It sounds like you.
I went on for 3 minutes here bitching about being old.
Yeah, that comes with the territory.
Right. So I relocated myself on my porch.
Okay.
A makeshift porch. That's really not a porch, it's a roof, but at least that's where I sleep at night.
Close enough.
We got shade from the sun because the sun is setting in the west, and this the porch is on the east side. I got a great view of a lot of greenery, and anything that happens in the backyard at Dingman House, I got it covered. So it can be entertaining. And I'm contemplating my community and the growing pains that we're inevitably going to be going through. I'm wondering, and I'm doing it again. I can't believe I'm still doing this. August marks our 45th year. This is a... this year has been a really an acceleration of change in our community. And people, if anyone has been listening to the Jerbish of mine for the last 10 years, say, this sounds very, very familiar, Frank. It's so what's new? And true. But it's just a, but I have to believe, I do have to believe that there are stages. I know there are stages because I'm living through them. You know, when I started this thing 45 years ago, I was 24 years old.
Yeah.
Full of bigotry. And I was convinced I was absolutely right. And I needed to show it all the time. And I was obsessive. And I held on to little things. It's amazing how uptight I was in the 20s and the energy I had and the fights we fought in community, blah, blah, blah. And that lasted, you know, for maybe 7 years. And then I got bounced back in the seminary on the rebound from a love affair, the great love affair with Jackie Dickey, great woman. Should have went with her to Indiana and South Bend. I could have been someone there, but no, I wanted to stay in Des Moines.
Yeah, well.
And then I went to the seminary, got myself ordained. Just loved being a priest. Just had a hard time with the church, and I played that about as much as I could for 19 years. Mm-hmm. I had several times in which I went to jail, and, you know, I had bishops backing and for some stuff, but most of it they didn't like. And then, as soon as I got ordained, the bishop who ordained me had a stroke and passed on in a few years. So it's been really rough, but and now I'm back at the worker after doing a plowsters action. But the constant thing is there's lots of different people who come through this house all the time, all the time. I swear I'm the most constant thing about the tradition because I'm here, but I live with the other two guys. I mean, Eddie's here and Norman's here. I mean, all together, we're like 110 years of Des Moines Catholic worker history in the three of us.
Yeah.
And then Annie is the next longest standing person, and she's been with us for 20.
Uh-huh.
So, whoa, what's that all about? That's where I'm at. These are stages. And I'm in the, this is like, wow, we're 45 years old as a movement, a house, and a movement that's like 80 years old. But I'm the, in my world, I'm in my last stages. I mean, I went from student of the Catholic worker, practitioner of the Catholic worker, elder in the Catholic worker, and now I'm retiring in the Catholic worker. I mean, it's a total program. And where it'll be and how it'll grow is a mystery to me. And I have some interesting people who may or may not bite on, and that's always been the case.
Yeah.
And I'm still, we just hot from the mailbox. Jess got her assignment. She's to be an Osage, I believe that is, in Wisconsin, one of the women's prisons in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it's not a maximum security joint. So,
really?
It's a place where she can get a job and start as the, as she told the judge. Paying restitution on the $3 million I owe you.
Ha! I see.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and then the just kind of the, for me, then it's like, I'm committed to making an effort to free Jessica Resnicek the rest of my life. It could very well be that. So that's going to be part of what this stage of life is about, too. So,
yeah.
And I brought up an idea about let's start. They're all on board to put out another Via Pacis. That's kind of exciting.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. I'll be glad to receive on one. It's been too long.
Yeah. We'll start doing that again.
Good.
Two of the more promising folks, really good kids. Austin and Frida. Austin's the guy who comes out of Moody Bible Study, a Bible school, and a Christian-based guy, the Jesus freak. And then, Frida is a radical feminist, and they want to work on a a demo at the cathedral regarding the Native American mass graves. All that tells me is, my gosh, these people are interested enough in the church to go and protest. That's terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of that is the good stuff. I got Jessica on the line, so coming through. I've probably talked enough.
Okay.
Much love. All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Frank. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank joins us every week, and it's almost like an ongoing journal from him. Actually, he's described it as a confessional, but I'm no priest, so I don't know, think that quite works. Anyway, thank you, listeners, for being here with me on the New American Dream Radio Show. I really appreciate you tuning in tonight. I hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And don't forget, it's listener-supported radio, so make sure you show them some love, show them some support right there at freedomslips.com. You can subscribe to them on Patreon like I do. You can buy some really cool swag. I think there are a number of other ways that you can help them to keep this network on the air. They keep two streams of shows going pretty much 24/7. They're really good people. They believe in what they're doing, and they do it. And they're not making any money for it. It all goes to support the station. So, a worthy cause. Don't miss it. All right, then. So we should be having a station break anytime now. But, we've actually kind of been missing the bottom of the second half hour station breaks some of the time. So I'm going to keep talking a little bit here, and then we'll, if we don't get a station break, we're going to run right on to our final guest of the evening, Thomas Wertmann, who is from the Ohio MUFON, that's Mutual UFO Network. And I know that Thomas has some very exciting stuff that he plans to present to us tonight. So, we're well into the station break time right now. I'm going to give it just a little bit longer before I call Thomas, but I don't think we're going to get any more ads. So once again, let me remind you, freedomslips.com. Find a way. Help them keep this network going. It's really worth it. One of the best ways you can spend a few bucks. So absolutely worth it. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. All right. Well, I'm sick of waiting for the station break, and I don't think it's coming. So I'm going to call up Thomas Wertmann, and hopefully he is ready to go. So here we go. Thomas Wertmann, we're going to pull him in from northeastern Ohio and see what he has for us tonight.
So, hello.
Well, hello, Thomas. Looks like no station break, so you are on right now. And, let's hear what's happening in the world of UFOs, UFO sightings, investigations, and all that good stuff.
Well, in the UFO world right now, there's a couple things going on.
Well, first of all, today is actually the 74th anniversary of Roswell. So if you want to go out, Chuck, and dress up in an alien outfit and go out to Roswell, you would just kind of fit right in the crowd and nobody would notice you. But on a more serious note, one of the big things in the UFO this month is there's been a long-awaited report. And this report was being kind of spurred on by the Nimitz sightings, the Omaha sightings, these naval events going from 2004 up to 2019. It got a lot of attention from the public. Also, Congress started looking at it, and they put a request in for what they called a UAP task force. In other words, unidentified aerial phenomena task force, which was given 6 months to create a report. Now, the report was supposed to come out on June 25th, and I knew individuals who were sitting at their computers, hitting the refresh button over and over and over again, waiting for that report to pop up. And it did come out from, in this case, the Director of National Intelligence. Well, there's actually two reports created. One was an abbreviated version for the public. So it was basically censored of any information regarding national security and so forth. There is a longer version which contained that went to Congress. Now, when I got this 9-page report, I kind of thought right away of almost like high school, writing an English paper. You know how you used to try to fill as much space as possible? When I look at the 9-page report, the first thing I see is preliminary assessment, unidentified aerial phenomena, is on one page. Okay, so let's take the 9 pages and let's take that one and throw it away. Now we're down to 8. There's another page in the report that says UAP. It's a definition for the word UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena. Another definition for unidentified aerial phenomena event. That means somebody saw a UAP. Sorry, throwing that one out too. So now we're down to 7. Okay, you had a final page which says, by the way, in this Senate report, these are the questions that we want answered. So really, it's a listing of all the questions, almost like, you know, what you're supposed to write about in class. Sorry, throwing that one out too. So now we're down to 6. And if you look at the other pages, you have about 5.5 pages of content at best that was in this report. The ones I know in the UFO community, when they saw this, they basically kind of blew up. They're saying, wait a minute, we've been waiting, you know, all this information since 1947 and before, all this stuff on UFOs, and we don't see that report. There was no mention of that stuff in the report. I mean, they made no statements regarding ET in the report. There's no mention of Roswell, no mention of Area 51, anything regarding, in this case, recovered materials, debris, etc. There was nothing like that. And these people I know, I mean, they were just going ballistic. Emails were going rampant all over the internet. Well, when I looked at the report, I kind of saw it a different way because sometimes I danced to a different drummer. Well, I basically saw what I expected. They largely focused on everything from 2004 to 2019. They looked at the naval events. They looked at a number of other events. Actually, there's a total of 144 reports they looked at, submitted to the government, actually from government agencies. Now, one thing was interesting, they did say, in these 144 reports, one of them had an explanation. They said it was a deflating balloon of some sort. But 80 of the reports, they said, involved observations with multiple sensors. Now, when you see the word multiple sensors, it's like, what are they really kind of considering multiple sensors? Well, a human observation is one type of a sensor. In the reports with MUFON and a lot of other agencies, when we take reports in, we're pretty much dealing technically with one sensor, somebody who's watching or sees an object in the sky. They see it, they observe it, They analyze what they, you know, what they think they saw, and they turn a report in. One sensor. If you're lucky, maybe you get photographs. Well, what these 80 reports contained is, and it wasn't specific on what sensors, but really goes back to geospatial intelligence, which really amounts to going back and looking at identifying anything on, above, or beneath the surface. Now, that could be using satellite data, infrared imaging from space. It could be using any sort of sensors to gather information. So in a sense, I'm almost picturing you have two different types of forms of information coming in. You've got actual people observing these things. You have information coming in from satellites, et cetera, some other form, reinforcing that in another medium. Another thing is signals intelligence. These things that were being tracked could have been putting out signals like a radio frequency. Maybe it was sending out almost like somebody was controlling these things. So it's almost like somebody was transmitting and it was receiving and vice versa. So they were tracking this potentially that way. Another way is what they call measurement and signature intelligence, which goes back to radar data, acoustic, meaning that maybe there are underwater sensors that picked up motions of objects, infrared, electro-optical. So there's a number of different signatures that they also could have been tracking there. So when they looked at these 144 reports, one is identified, 80 contained multiple means of multiple sensors. So you've got a lot more information on these objects. When they said that their reports then focused on the naval encounters going forward, not surprising, because you're looking at areas where you've got the most access to multiple sensors. They're recent, they're government reports, so it should be, I would think, relatively easy to gather all this information from various departments to be able to pull all this data together to reinforce these sightings. So when individuals were upset that they weren't going back and looking at the Roswells, looking at all these major events, well, when you go back and look at the Roswells and these other events, a lot of what you have is stories passed on from witness to witness or witness to family members. So they're going down multiple generations, and who knows how accurate some of those stories are anymore. The other thing is you don't have the multiple sensors. You don't have radar data. You don't have photographs. You don't have all this extra information to report them. So they stayed with what they had the newest information on, to me, which would make sense if you're starting to build something from the ground up. And I think that word building from the ground up is exactly right, because I've always wondered, when Project Blue Book went away back in 1969, what happened to UFO reporting? I mean, the Air Force ran it. It stopped. There is supposedly a gap, but there are still reports being attained. You get up to the ATIP program back in 2007 to 2012, which reportedly came in. But what was really going on? Well, from what the report basically said, is basically it sounds like everybody dropped the ball after Project Blue Book was done away with. There was no standardized reporting method across the board in all the different branches. They said the Navy actually started their own standardized mechanism in 2019, in March. Now think about that. Project Blue Book went away in 1969. 50 years later, now you have the Navy creating a standardized system. And what's important about that is they said that the Air Force also adopted that same system. So now you had two branches of the military using the same system. The problem is the Air Force didn't establish theirs until November 2020, not very long ago. When the task force started interviewing people then, they found out that, yeah, a lot of people had seen things, but there wasn't really a structured, formal, or informal method for reporting things. They basically said in the report that, yeah, there's a big reason why there was no standardized procedure. And that was, even if you got a lot of members now, which are very scientific, you've got a lot of people in the military and intelligence communities, which are more openly engaging the topic. They said that a major stigma still exists about UFOs and talking about UFOs. So they said, really, it's kind of like there is no structure there because they were afraid of that stigma being attached to tracking down UFOs. So it wasn't until, really, you're looking at like a year to 2 years ago that a standardized method was put together. But they also, in the report, said that it was not across the board, that not all branches of the government were using a same standardized procedure. Not surprising, because I think of the different branches of the government being very competitive. They're all competing for defense spending, defense money. They're also looking for various technologies, so all very competitive. So they're kind of, to me, doing their own thing. So it's not surprising. You go over to report more. In that report, when they started scrubbing it down even farther, they said that there were 18 incidents in 21 reports where the individuals reported extremely unusual movements or patterns of these objects. That means that they were basically being able to stay completely stationary in the high winds at high altitudes. They could move against the wind. They'd maneuver abruptly. And they'd also move at considerable speed. And some of the things coming out, not in this report, but other reports, were objects being tracked up to like 14,000 miles an hour. They also observed things that they said did not have what they considered a discernible means of propulsion, meaning that when they looked at the videos of these things, they could not see engines of any sort. Also, a number of them, they noticed no wings, which no means for lift. They also reported in some of these cases that they picked up radio frequency energy coming from these objects, meaning that maybe it had some sort of a transmitter on them, or it was reported that some of these objects even jammed the jets which were intercepting them, jammed their radar. So I did see some interesting things in here. Another thing that popped up is about the fact that these are considered a potential threat to national security. They said 11 instances that were documented in which the pilots reported near misses with these objects. Yeah. So they were coming close. So, I mean, from that sense, to me, it's interesting what came up. The thing it's going to be is, what are they going to do going forward? Well, the thing that they may be setting up, again, starting fresh, one of the old terms, that, if you remember, is kind of like throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Right.
There's that old term. Well, by starting fresh, they're kind of overlooking all these old reports, starting fresh. One of the things that they may be looking at, and this was suggested, is integrating artificial intelligence into analysis of this information. So what they can do is, to me, if you create a standardized report across the board in all these organizations, you have information coming in that's all formatted the same way. It makes it much easier to develop a system to look at these reports, look at keywords, analyze data, be designed to analyze radar data and all these other means to be able to filter out things which may be identifiable. Because if you can look at these cases and say, okay, let's eliminate these because these are most likely aircraft because of where they occurred at, the altitudes they occurred, and so forth on air, and they may be able to import the radar data into these to help identify all this stuff. So in other words, you can filter out these known cases to really get down to the unusual stuff, this stuff that really can be of interest to national defense. So that's why I think they're basically starting fresh and going right from there to be able to integrate artificial intelligence, or at least they should be, put it that way. Maybe
right.
My thinking is off, but they should be. Then I look at it this way. If you can get a system designed to basically scrub these reports, go through them and identify these interesting cases, then you can go back into historical information gradually and start putting these other cases in, going backwards in time, looking for the same factors.
Right.
And then you may find out that, hey, a lot of this stuff actually began a number of years ago. And maybe you can identify where it began at and so forth. But it's just the tip of the iceberg out there. So yeah. I'm not throwing all the report out, all the 5.5 pages I really looked at. But they did come out and say, but a lot of these things probably lack a single explanation. Could be airborne clutter, balloons, birds, etc. Well, we do that at MUFON too. Natural atmosphere, ice crystals and so forth, same thing. Could be industry developments. Could be something for the government, understandable. Or it could be a foreign system of some sort out there, China. But I don't think some of the things that they're seeing are, like when they talk about this Tic Tac event, to me that seems to be well beyond the technology that Russia or China may have.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as I thought was interesting, is after this report came out, it wasn't a major groundbreaking thing, but there is another video that came out. This video came out from the USS Omaha. USS Omaha from 2019, that was the ship that that they brought out the fact that they were being swarmed, as they called it, by UAPs. Well, they had the onboard crewmen using night vision instruments to record these objects flying around the ships. Then another video came out showing radar data, radar screens of these same objects flying around the ship. So they had another means. Well, there's another video that came out recently. This other video was not night vision, but it was just more like a standard camera's way it appeared. But it showed what appeared to be like two objects that you couldn't tell were drones. You didn't get enough information on them, but you could see two objects hovering at a guess, maybe within 2 miles of the ship. They were just stationary out there. And it was interesting because in the same video, you also saw what appeared to be a helicopter or an aircraft that appeared to be going above these two objects, whatever they were. But reportedly, these two objects were being filmed, recorded, were also in connection with all those objects that were basically swarming the ship. So we've got more stuff like that coming out. So it's been a very, very, I guess you could say, busy last couple of weeks in the UFO community looking over this report. And I don't think we're done yet. Because as a matter of fact, that right after the report came out, there is another document I'm filtering through on my desk here that came out right after that. And what the other document said is they basically analyzed this report, saw the fact that they mentioned that there was no structure set up in the government, basically, to track these UAPs on a uniform basis. So it came out from the office of, Kathleen Hicks signed this. But what they did is they created, they want a procedure set up to synchronize the collection reporting of data of UAPs in reference to military test and training ranges. So they're in particular interested in these reports over these regions.
Right.
They want the establishment basically of like a group to review these particular areas. They want a whole structure, staffing. They want to know what staffing is required, et cetera. And then these reports are going to be going into the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, among others. So this, they recognize some weaknesses already, it appeared, and started putting some things in place. So it's just a matter now, Chuck, of where we go from here.
Yeah.
Well, are they going to be serious?
I think the I think that coming up with a universal reporting method is a very strong step towards actually getting some useful data ongoing. And it also occurs to me that this, the whole analysis of UAPs? I keep wanting to call them UFOs. I don't know.
You know, I'm the same way. UAPs, UFOs, UAVs, whatever, whatever the flavor of the day is.
Anyway,
you know,
but the whole history of this analysis, I think, is proceeding in a very similar way to to police investigations or FBI or whatever into crimes. As the technology continues to improve and they can find more things, you know, like DNA evidence, then they can go back and analyze cold cases from 40 or 50 years ago. And I think it's the same thing with the all of this UFO reporting. You know, as they get better and better platforms and standardization of their reporting, it will be more possible, more easily possible to analyze the things in the past.
Yeah, and that's the way I see it. And I know I'd probably upset a number of them out there, a number of friends by saying that. But I think it's the most logical way to do it. Don't try to set up a system where you're trying to analyze stuff from Roswell, all these other cases going way back. Because there's just too much information in there that may not be accurate. And you're setting up a system based on something that may not be accurate. Because I hate to use that word assume, but when they look at the data coming in from the radar systems, et cetera, as much as those systems are being maintained, monitored, it's going to be a minimal chance of inaccurate information. Mm-hmm. And I know there may be skeptics out there going, oh, no. No, but think about it. I mean, they're maintaining these things, you know, 24/7.
Right.
So the chance is going to be much less than maybe a private individual who's making a report, make an error. I mean, that private individual is much more likely to err in time, all these other factors, time, what direction they were looking and so forth, just because they may be so excited on when the event happened.
Yeah.
But when you've got the electronic data, that's going to be much more firm. And something I think you can really go by. And your term is good when you say refer to like a cold case. That's really a good way to look at it, Chuck. And
all
then
right.
You can build upon that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It will certainly be interesting to see how this evolves over the years. Hope we get to see a good bit of it.
I hope so, but I always love it when they come out and say, well, what we really need to advance with this, and it wasn't a report at some point, I know I've got in front of me here somewhere, but they mentioned about the fact that, well, this subject does need further analysis. It needs further study. We need to establish like these groups, et cetera, and so forth on there to be able to do this. But to do that, we're going to need more money.
yeah, right.
And you know, you knew the funding had to be requested at some point.
Of course.
But I'm thinking, how much technology do they already have? They're saying that an interesting comment was in the report that said that some of the technology they're using to try to evaluate this stuff is not designed for UAPs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. If we have a potential foreign adversary coming in, that's kind of technically like a UAP in a sense. UFO, because
right.
I mean, until we really identify it, so you're telling us that, you know, this equipment really isn't adequate enough.
Mm.
I just found that interesting. Now, yeah. Something I did see today, that if I was in the Navy, I'd be trying to get a hold of some of these from the Army. They uh-huh. showed a new type of a night vision goggle that was incredible.
Mm.
So if they're looking at these things off the ships, they had a demonstration of a helicopter. It was just basically parked out like on a runway. Mm. And when the individual looked at the helicopter, you could see not a night vision type view, but more of a magnified night image. But the wow. helicopter was outlined with lines showing the whole, all the edges of the helicopter.
Wow.
And you could also see two individuals basically kneeling on the ground. You could see a whole outline of their silhouettes done by the imaging system that it must have added in by computerization somehow.
Right.
I'm like, man, I'd want a pair of those if I was in the Navy to help maybe identify some of these things. But you're right. We'll just have to wait and see going forward then, Chuck. So next month, I think, should be interesting.
Well, all right. I'm waiting with bated breath.
Oh, so am I. And I'm checking the news every day to see what pops up on various websites. But it's also interesting at one of the military sites that puts a lot of military stuff out, military stories. Some of their stories are kind of running parallel to UFO stuff.
Huh.
And in some senses, they're almost explaining some of the things that we may be seeing.
Right.
Like in this case, they're the new B-2 bomber replacement.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting out images of what it's going to be looking like already.
Hmm.
And I just happen to wonder if that's also testing out like at some place like Area 51 right now.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll be seeing triangular craft based on that before long.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for being with me on this second week of every month, Thomas. And,
oh, no problem.
There's our music, and that's the end of the show. So, listeners, I hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at FreedomSlips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but